This is Ricky Simons, the voice of Gurr from Invader Zim, and you're listening to the Short Box Showcase.
Woo!
Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Short Box Showcase.
Episode 42. Welcome to DC Reborn.
In this episode, we'll be talking about all the news at DC Comics. What we're gonna buy, what we're definitely not gonna buy, and some things that look interesting enough to maybe give a read.
But first, a little feedback. And we'll start with general feedback and feedback on episodes from the distant past.
A thing which we love, getting feedbacks on episodes that are in the distant past.
I wanted to start with a shout out to Derek Coward of the Comic Book Noise Network. He mentioned Relatively Geeky recently as one of the podcast networks that he likes. I tweeted him that I appreciated that comment, and he replied with, "You guys are doing good work." So thanks again, Derek.
Chris Tyler, from pretty much everywhere on the Two True Freaks Network, confessed that he was a little late to the party. "I just got caught up on Short Box Showcase in less than a week. From episode one. This show is greatness." No, Chris, you are greatness.
And lateness.
Ah, yes. But we are glad to have you listening.
I also got a message from Mario, at Luther Lang, on Twitter. I think he might be a Superman fan. "Been playing catch-up with all the episodes in the network. I'll send you guys an email if I get a chance. Glad I'm finally listening."
We are also glad you're finally listening.
He followed up a couple days later about episode 23 on superhero pros. "I really need to read Someday I Will Be Invincible, seeing as I've had it sitting around for over a year. It was a gift, and I've just never gotten to it." Yes, Mario, you definitely need to read that soon.
And I will admit that I have also been halfway through Soon I Will Be Invincible for about 14 months.
It's the Doctor Doom origin story. How could you not? Oops, spoilers.
We also heard back from Ben Grimoire, who, like Chris, has been catching up. "Hello, Professor and Emily. I figured I'd give some feedback on your episode about conventions and cosplay, since I have it on the mind at the moment. Personally, I prefer actual comic conventions, where I can go buy actual comic books, not just pop culture merchandise. That being said, I mostly go to anime conventions, because those happen to be the ones that are near where I live."
Now, we've talked about one of our plans is to get to Baltimore Comic Con.
Yes.
Which I understand has that comic book feel to it still.
The focus, yeah.
And I'm also going to be sneaking out, as we record this, in a couple of weeks, by about the time this comes out, to a small press and sort of independent comic convention here in Central Ohio. And I showed you the flyer. You're going to be working that day, so you're not going to be able to make it.
Unfortunately.
But you did notice a couple of the key things that really attracted me to that particular con?
Well, it stated free admission.
Oh, okay.
Free parking.
Ah, yes.
And food trucks on site.
We call that a win-win-win scenario. I may even go into the convention.
Maybe buy a comic book.
Talk to some independent creators. You never know.
That would be a bonus. Ben continues, "As for cosplay, I love it. Though I'm not amazing at creating my own, usually enlisting help for that kind of stuff. I get that." "And even though nobody asked, for our next one, my boyfriend and I will be cosplaying Carlos and Cecil from Welcome to Night Vale. Looking forward to future episodes, Ben Grimoire. And I personally am very interested in seeing pictures of this. Since I am a lapsed fan of Night Vale, I really like it, but I'm like a year and a half behind on it. I kind of want to start listening to their new project, Ghost Stories, which is similar-ish concept, or Alice Isn't Dead, I think, is the other one that they're working on. But I'm just really far behind, so it's sort of intimidating to catch up.
I get that.
But Night Vale cosplayers are like my favorite people in the world, because they're bringing their interpretations of a purposely nondescript set of characters from a media with no visual aids.
Right.
Like, intentionally. There are no canonical images of what anyone looks like, except that Cecil is neither tall nor short, neither fat nor thin.
That does narrow it down.
And has noticeable eyes, and Carlos's hair is really pretty. As the extent of their descriptions.
That's the physical descriptions, yeah.
So I really want to see these interpretations. And most important question, white hair or black hair? It's a big fandom fight.
I'm not sure what that means, but Ben, know that you have a fan here. And we want pictures. Now, most of the feedback came from our last episode, which was about the female-led TV shows that we've been watching. Andy Leyland from The Fantasticast, and other things, called us out for continuing to express shock and surprise and amazement about just how good iZombie is.
It's a really good show. It's a surprisingly good show. I'm sorry, Andy, it's just a fact.
He then managed to complain about the TV system over there across the pond. Can you believe not a single UK broadcaster has picked up iZombie? Maybe if three different channels didn't show NCIS three times a day, there'd be a slot for it.
A little bit of CBS bitterness there. Darren and Ruth from Trekker Talk and Warlord Worlds wrote in, "Hi, Emily and Professor Allen. We both thoroughly enjoyed your Super Ladies episode on Shortbox Showcase. Agent Carter was the best new series last year, and the second season has been equally great. It is disappointing to see the continuing low ratings for this excellent show." Sad face.
I was thinking about this, and I think we are part of the problem.
Yes.
And I know we are not alone. I think because it's a miniseries, in our minds, we were able to bank all the episodes on the DVR. And, you know, we haven't strictly technically watched any of them yet.
Yeah.
But the plan is to take a long weekend over the summer, Memorial Day weekend or something, we'll get caught up.
And watch the whole thing. Like,
because it's
6 months later.
Supergirl, 22 episodes. You can't do that. Flash, you can't do that. You have to stay at least within a few episodes. But with Agent Carter, the worst you'll do is get 8 episodes behind, bank them all, treat it like a Netflix show, like a movie.
Watch it all over
the
weekend.
Watch it all over a weekend, which does not do wonders for their ratings.
No.
And like I said, I know we are not alone. I've heard at least one other podcaster, I think it may have been Paul Spataro, who said that he is making
a similar choice.
Yeah, he's...
A similar choice has been made for him.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's his strategy for watching the show as well, which kills the ratings. So yeah. That is... much as we love miniseries...
This is the downside.
It's tough on network TV because of how we've been trained to consume short season type of shows.
Yeah. The Sutherlands continue. "We're not as thrilled about the move to California as the two of you." I'm just going to say you were thrilled. I was cautiously accepting. "We miss the film noir look of the first season. Right. To us, the perpetual sun and bright colored clothes of LA just don't fit the dark, mysterious tone of the show as well as it did in New York."
Now, to be fair, our first choice was go to London.
Well, yes.
Which would be foggy and rainy. Dark. And so that would have fit that same
concept.
Exactly.
But, yeah. "Peggy's hats and suits are gone, have been exchanged for tops designed to accentuate her figure. I assume that choice was made in an attempt to improve the show's ratings, but that does not appear to have worked."
Again, network TV choices sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. "However, this does illustrate what an excellent show it is, because despite these minor changes that we are not fans of, the series is still our favorite and the one we look forward to most seeing each week."
And it seems that season 2 will be season last. From all indications, we will not get our London post-Blitz rebuilding season, which is really what
that
I was
hoping really
for.
That is really disappointing, yeah. Though that wasn't the trajectory they were going.
No, I understand. So again, I'm totally putting my own unfair expectations on the show. And I'm certainly looking forward to watching season 2.
Yeah.
Imagine I will enjoy it. Those people who have actually watched it. Not just the vast majority of us who have simply DVR'd it for later watching eventually, maybe, have said good things about it, like Darren and Ruth have.
Though I have not seen it, apparently my expectations or my prospective possible guess at where the plot was going to go, it didn't do that, which I am very grateful for, because when I heard LA noir mystery... in the mid-late 40s.
Were you thinking Black Dahlia?
I heard the Black Dahlia, which is about a waitress being murdered.
Yeah.
And I really love Angie. And I was like, show, if you do this, I will personally come to Marvel TV Studios and beat up every single person that works there.
I do hear we get more Bridget Regan. as Crazy Dottie.
Ugh.
So
I love her.
That's a good thing.
I love her so much. Darren and Ruth continue. Supergirl is another of our favorites. After looking forward to the series all last summer, mm-hmm. we were honestly underwhelmed by the pilot. The episode seemed disjointed. We didn't like the sister. We didn't like Hank Henshaw. We didn't like Cat Grant. We didn't like that Kara told Wynn her secret identity immediately. We didn't like Kara working for the government agency, and the girl power theme was way too in your face and trying too hard.
Let me talk about pilots in general. Let me sort of get on my standard
soapbox. Get back on your soapbox, and then I'll get on mine.
So we've talked about this before. We even talked about it when we did that Supergirl recap with Michael Bradley. I think it went through the Superman-Batman feed with a round table talking about the first episode. We have to remember that pilots are not designed for us. They're not designed even to be on air. They're proof of concepts. The audience for those is network executives. And now I've come to the thinking, why do they even show the pilots on the air? It's a different crew. It's a different writing staff. It's usually 9 months later. There have been some recastings. But why don't we just
do a first episode?
Why don't we just do a first episode? I know they've sunk money, but write it off to R&D. Put it in another category on the spreadsheet. And I think Supergirl is an example.
I have referred to the pilot as actively counterproductive to getting new people into that show. Because people who are not already into the concept of Superman and Supergirl will not have their mind changed in any way by that pilot. It will, in fact, intensify their disliking. And I say this speaking about my roommate, who I've been desperately trying to convince to watch Supergirl. And she saw clips of the pilot and a few things from the first couple episodes and was just completely turned off, like anti-Supergirl. And so when this eventually goes to Netflix or CBS All Access and there's the entire season that's actually available to watch, I'm going to tell her, start with episode 7. Because the pilot, I enjoyed it. I saw good things in it, but it is not a good episode of TV. Mm-hmm. And the further we've gotten from it, and the better the show has gotten with every progressive episode.
In retrospect, problems in those first few episodes.
The pilot just gets worse and worse, like the further removed I get from it. And the problem with those first really 5 episodes afterwards is that they're all episodes that were at least in concept in the process of getting started.
Yeah, they were broken. They were
before the pre-production, they could, before the written, they could
right.
get
feedback
from the pilot.
Right.
And so with each episode, the problems of the pilot get progressively less noticeable. That in each episode, Alex Danvers is written more and more like a
human
character.
Being. Yeah.
Not even a human being, just a character. And Cat Grant is written more and more like a unified actual character rather than this like ping pong balling archetypal nonsense.
I think that's part of the problem with a pilot. That the pilot, you have to show these characters at their most extreme, so the executives can have, you know, boxes to put these characters into and say, okay, this is going to be mean, shrewish boss. This is going to be hard-edged sister. This is going to be...
This is going to be sympathetic friend. This is going to be tough but firm father figure. This is going to be...
And it's some combination of stereotype and archetype that you have to hit for these characters. Again, to convince the executives of what they're purchasing and that they can have some context for it.
And
especially at CBS, which buys procedurals with characters that fit some of these...
checkboxes.
Yeah, some of these molds. And now, by the time you've gotten at least a third of the way, certainly halfway through the first season, they've become characters. That process has become wonderful.
I think episodes 2 through 6 are the shortest distance that they could put between episode 1 and 7. Like, and I mean that in the most complimentary way, that they work really quickly to start fixing the problems of episode 1, but those problems are very noticeable. Wynn and Kara and James's love triangle is awful and grating and horrific for the first like 5 episodes because it's not written like actual romantic tension.
Right.
But by like episode 6, 7, 8, you kind of buy it. You understand what these people see in each other because you can see them as characters.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Danvers is not a person in the first episode, but by episode 3, she has a little bit of depth. By episode 4, she has right. some characteristics that are unique to her. By episode 7, she's, like, actually got agency. Mm-hmm. It just takes right. a while to really get to the place that I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to watch the pilot, there's no reason really to watch the 5 episodes that are fixing the pilot. Right. Just skip to human for a day and go from there.
And the Sutherlands agreed that things did start to get better after the pilot.
Yes. Over time, all of the characters became more interesting, and we now like both the sister and Hank/John, as well as Cat Grant, who are all favorites.
Yes.
It's a great show we look forward to each week. As we mentioned back when you covered Daredevil, we do not have Netflix, so we haven't seen Jessica Jones. However, we were already fans of Kristen Ritter and David Tennant, so we're definitely interested and hope to see it eventually. Thanks for another great episode.
Thanks for more great feedback. We also heard from Daniel Butcher of the Welcome to Level 7 podcast. And he loved that Emily said nice things about Aquaman.
He's awesome. Now, I'm not saying that Jason Momoa was the best thing in Batman v Superman, but he was easily in the top 5.
Daniel said, after all my lobbying, the Sea King finally gets mentioned on the show. Zeb Oswald said it was a cool episode, as always. I haven't seen Jessica Jones yet, but it sounded cool. And definitely, Iron Fist would let Jessica ride on the bike. A bro would let a guy hang with his woman. So we want to
bro
see...
Code.
What was it you wanted to see when the time we get to the Defenders?
The Fantastic Cast bathtub, but a motorcycle. The 4-man motorcycle with 2 sidecars.
That would be Matt and Danny in
yes.
the sidecars. And
it's one of my favorite pieces of fan art that I've ever seen was on Tumblr. So there was
right.
a you know, small skinny image of Luke running, and Matt and Danny are each on his shoulders, like holding on to him. And then you scroll down to the next image, and the next image is Jess holding up Luke. And she's running, carrying yeah. all the boys. I'm like, that is like my favorite thing in the world. Now, Defenders supporting each other.
Now, Zeb said he didn't like Supergirl as much as we do, or as he calls it, the Martian Manhunter and his Amazing Friends show.
I get that.
I was liking Jimmy for a while. He and Lucy are perfect together. What, no love for Wynn? I ship him and Alex Danvers.
Well, now that we've seen, Wynn kind of has a type of tall, dark...
Scary.
Can kill you with a thought. Like, I kind of see it.
I can see that. Zeb did continue to say that he does like Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. Hawkgirl's good on that show, and I like White Canary and Dr. Stein. Can't wait to hear the next episode.
You know, I still haven't watched Legends, but from what I see, the GIFs and the quotes and stills, it looks really good, and I really love Leonard Snart. Like, I cannot describe yes. how much I love Leonard Snart, so I really want to watch that show because I basically consider it Captain Cold and his amazing hero buddies.
Well, Captain Cold and Heatwave, the last couple episodes.
No, oh, I know.
Tension in
some,
the relationship.
There's like, some stuff going
it's like
down.
Fire and ice. They're just so different. Yeah. And...
or my favorite line thus far. Who could be trying to access the ship? The ladies we left back in 1956. What about Ray? Like I said. Yeah. I just love you. I love you, Lenny. I love you so much. Bradley Null also wrote in on that episode. Just a quick note. If I wasn't driving, I would give you a longer letter of praise. But I'm writing this at red lights and stop signs, so thank you for the entertainment on said drive, but this has to be short. Thank you, Bradley. Drive safely.
I mean, we've got a good-sized audience, and we love them, but we can't afford to lose one.
No.
We cannot have man overboard at this point. We're still in the building stage, so listener lives matter.
Yes.
And on to another note from Ben Grimoire. I absolutely loved this episode. On top of some interesting commentary of the shows, it's also a good motivator to get off my lazy butt and get caught up on Supergirl. Though
yep.
not the first 5-6 episodes, if you...
You can skip those.
Skip to number 7. And finish Jessica Jones, still working on iZombie. I'll listen to that segment as soon as I get caught up on the series.
Fair enough.
And I had my name said on a podcast, and you gave some interesting response to my email.
We try.
We said his name twice in this one, so good
for
us.
So double download numbers? Wait, no.
Is that how that works? But I need more Super Lady talk. maybe sometime in the future, you could go over some current comic books that are led by women. Captain Marvel, Squirrel Girl, DC Bombshells, Black Canary, or your favorite female-led comics of all time. I'd be interested in hearing your opinion and possibly getting some recommendations. P.S. If you haven't read it yet, DC Bombshells is really, really good. I recommend it highly, and John Constantine is in it, which is always a plus.
Let's be honest. John Bunstantine is in that. And he is adorable.
Yes, he is a bunny. Yeah. He gets regularly pulled out of Zatanna's hat.
Giggity.
So, this is our last piece of feedback. So I did want to actually address what Bennett said and do a couple minutes answering that part of the email talking about some of the female-led comic books that we're reading and liking. And that does include DC Bombshells.
This is just a great, fun book, like, especially considering that it is, like, in concept, was just art first.
Right.
We had pretty low expectations of what the actual content would be. But it's been really interesting stuff as far as, like, the conceptual stuff behind people's roles in the 1940s World War II alternate universe that they've got set up.
Now, this is especially interesting for us, because you and I, we plant our flag down as being story first.
Oh, yeah.
People. So I think our expectations
were probably even lower.
Of yeah. A comic series based on a set of statues. Cool looking statues.
Well, I mean, granted, we really probably shouldn't do this because how much of 1980s pop culture was just stories right. Based around toys?
See, that is true.
Like,
that is true.
It's a grand tradition. Hello, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, and Transformers.
Jason Trenner, hello. Maybe, it's not as crazy a thought as...
Much like iZombie, maybe we shouldn't have been quite as surprised about the quality, but it is really good. I really like the take that they've done on Wonder Woman in particular. That is really my Wonder Woman, right. Is that slightly fish out of water, but completely awesome and self-confident warrior princess.
And hanging out with Mira quite a bit. And so you get two sides of the same coin in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I've liked the Supergirl-Stargirl
duo. Oh, yeah.
Duo from Russia in their perspective. And I thought there was some beautiful art in that. I think talked about it somewhere or another. But one of those issues as they're realizing how Russia and how the party has used them for propaganda purposes, those sections of the story are punctuated by these full-page spreads, which are World War II propaganda posters. As the reader, you're realizing the realization that they're making about how they've been used. And I just thought that was a brilliant art and story meshing together.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing that happens when the art and design kind of comes
right,
first, is
right.
That's the sort of thing that they think of and mm-hmm. build the story around. Zatanna is obviously wonderful.
I don't know quite how caught up you are in reading it, but there are zombies now, too.
Oh, excellent. See, and that was...
So it's Nazis and the undead. I think there might be sea zombies.
Oh.
Like Atlantis
great.
Zombies. So it's... Anyway.
That was a thing with Zatanna that I really liked. And this sort of goes for the series as a whole, that it...
Right. There was a little bit of weird on her side. That was sort of the Nazi... seeking out the supernatural, again, to what extent that's true, or to what extent that sort of become part of the mythos
that's
of Hitler in Germany.
The story does a really good job of researching and mm-hmm. bringing in genuine,
right.
real things. For example, the fact that Stargirl and Supergirl work with the Night Witches,
yes.
who are boss! Like, oh my gosh, the Night Witches are so, so cool. And so that's included as just part of the history of like, oh, by the way, yeah, since we're doing this like all female all the time
right.
story, let's also include some genuine female badasses that actually existed in World War II history.
And I don't know if we said this. This is taking place at this point in 1940. So it is pre-Pearl Harbor, pre the U.S. formally entering the war. So that's always an interesting place to tell stories.
Mm-hmm. But it also doesn't feel tied to being
right.
either like strict DC
pseudo-historical right.
or being a strict like historical
exactly.
alternate universe. It's not historical fiction.
Right.
So it has a lot of things like the supernatural, which is a thing that's sort of in the mythos of
mm-hmm.
Hitler trying to seek
right.
supernatural aid during World War II, which
and
shows up in Captain America.
I was going to say, and that has shown up in in comic books through Spear of Destiny, and various things. So there's a historical context for that, but there's also tapping into comic book context for those stories as
Real pseudo-history and comic book pseudo-history.
Right.
But it doesn't feel tied to either, just taking bits and pieces from wherever in order to make a really interesting story. I dig it.
And that's a digital-first book. So my understanding is that it will survive the DC rebirth, I think.
It's also one of their big sellers, so they're not going to cancel that.
That's my understanding. Unfortunately, another one of the new books that we're reading, Starfire, my understanding is that it will not survive rebirth. Yeah. Since it's part of the main continuity and it's not getting the rebirth, my understanding is...
It didn't predate New 52 or anything,
so... But I really liked that take. And to me, what was great about this book, this version of Starfire, which is on about, I guess, issue 10 or 12 in that ballpark, was that, to me, it was an attempt to rehabilitate Starfire from the new 52 incarnation.
Which it totally achieved.
Yes. It's fun.
Yes, very important, all three of those.
Takes place in Key West, where weird things happen all the time. I don't just mean in this issue. I mean in real life.
Yeah, in reality.
You know, the joke in the preview issue, you know, they ran the previews in the Convergence, some of the Convergence issues, and the sort of setup or the punchline of the Starfire preview was that Key West is the one place in the U.S. where an orange-skinned alien in a skimpy purple outfit
totally
would
blends
kind
in.
Of fit in, wouldn't really get much notice. But they've built up some nice characters around her, the female sheriff in the town,
the sheriff's brother.
Her brother. There's another super-powered female that was sort of undercover in the town. And
so they have sort of a dynamic duo going on. And
the three of them, with the two powered women and the sheriff, they visited the other character, Atlee, her home world, which you get to through the Everglades because, you know, Florida.
Yeah.
Where else would you put a strange new dimension?
Yeah, put that portal at the bottom of the Everglades.
Because if it did bubble through, would you really notice? Would you really notice?
I'm just saying, landfish and snakes that eat chihuahuas. Like, there is stuff going down in the Florida Everglades. Again, in reality.
Now, we've done a lot of DC talk so far. Second half of the show is going to be about...
More
DC relaunch. But we have a little bit of marveling that we can do right here in terms of some of these books that we're liking as well.
Just like Bombshells, this isn't really going to be a recommendation, because if you are at all interested in superheroines, you are already reading this book, Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. Ms. Marvel has continued to be awesome. I am not caught up on it, but my roommate recently bought volumes 3 and 4 of the trades, which I believe are the last two before the all-new
Secret
Marvel
Wars and all
thing
of that, right.
happened.
We've read 1 and 2.
Yes.
Is that right?
So those are good. I really like it. Now, I personally have moments where I get a little bored in Ms. Marvel, but that's just because I'm bored by Inhumans in general. But Lockjaw is adorable.
Yes.
And so when it's just Lockjaw and Ms. Marvel running around and embiggening and punching the crap out of things, like Starfire, it's just really fun. But that story also does have really good moments of pathos. And the panel that I always see is when Kamala's mother figures out that her daughter is a superheroine, and they're like standing in the mosque, and Kamala's getting all worked up and upset and like, are you disappointed? And her mother just turns to her and says, if the only thing you're scared about me knowing is that you go out and help people at night, then I thank God that I raised a righteous child. And I'm just like, oh gosh, I know, I'm dying forever. I am always here for supportive parents of super teens.
That has been a theme throughout the run of Short Box Showcase. Now, I can speak to Ms. Marvel's popularity within a stream of fandom, because every year, our buddy Paul O'Connor at his Long Box Graveyard blog does a March Madness where, you know, he brackets out various things, and every week there's a vote, and last year, it was super pets and super animals.
Which we do not speak of.
And one animal that made it to the finals, I believe may have been the winner, was Lockjaw. And I think that's because he had sort of come back in the Ms. Marvel book. It was at you know, the images that he was using to demonstrate Lockjaw were the Ms. Marvel images. So I think, you know, that just speaks to the popularity of Ms. Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
That Lockjaw has regained his rightful spot as a leading animal in the Marvel U. Another Marvel character that I've really liked is Silk. And she came out of the Spider-Verse event. But I recently read the trade of last year's Silk series, which was 7 issues, before getting Secret Wars'd.
Yeah, I think that's the official term.
I like that one a bit. It had a lot of the early Peter Parker vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the plot involved her going up against the Black Cat. And I think that kind of continues in the current Silk series, which, you know, after less than a year got restarted and renumbered with the new number one because Modern Comics. So it's very confusing because someone, actually I think it may have been Paul at Longbox Graveyard, did a post about, just read this new Silk number one and I really liked it. I thought, hey, I just read that trade. I really liked it too. He said, no, I mean the one from this year. There's a Silk number one a year after there was a Silk number one last year? Was it? So I like the series, but it did make me look dumb.
And you didn't pick up that series because of the Spider-Man Unlimited mobile game.
But it helped.
But it helps.
It did. It got me familiar with Silk and the Spider-Verse characters. And they talk about her backstory, which involves the Inheritors and Karn and these characters who were the villains in the early versions last year of the Spider-Man Unlimited mobile game, which, by the way,
very good game.
It's pretty good.
If you're friends with us on Facebook, get it. We can send you stuff.
Exactly. I've also heard very good things about the new, I think it's 2 issues so far, Black Widow. From the Daredevil team of Wade and Samney.
Okay, Wade and Samney can write anything, and it'll be glorious. Like, I don't even, like, I was even trying to think of a ridiculous concept, and I was like, I don't know, a Penn and Teller comic? I would buy a Penn and Teller comic written by Wade and Samney. Actually, that would be amazing.
And I've said this multiple times on various shows, but the more I read Mark Wade, the higher he rises in my rankings of writers. And I don't know why.
He's not, like, right there in the forefront of your mind, but, like...
I don't know. But
the
more
I
read...
He's the best writer we never think of.
Old stuff of his, new stuff of his.
It's all good.
It's really good.
All awesome.
And then, similarly, Mockingbird has a new book out, which I think is either the same as Black Widow or maybe 1 month removed. I've not heard as many things about Mockingbird that I have about Black Widow. But what I have heard, again, has been really positive. That was a creative team I wasn't familiar with. But again, the few reviews I've heard have been positive. So there really are opportunities to find current female-led comic books if that's what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not sure if this news is out of date by now because Marvel has been renumbering everything constantly. But the all-new Avengers, a big part of that was that it was an all-female Avengers team, which was really cool. And it had my personal favorite ever, She-Hulk. I love She-Hulk. I love her so much.
Yeah, if you're looking for older books that fit this criteria, anything with She-Hulk
like, honestly,
are terrific.
I'm just going to say this. Even when She-Hulk is bad, it's still pretty badass. So the all-new, all-different Avengers was cool for that reason. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which looks adorable, but I have never read.
Doctor Doom has some issues with Squirrel Girl.
I can understand that.
So it's just not something we talk about at the cabinet meetings.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not discussed in this household.
So definitely good stuff out there.
Yes, indeed.
Well, all right, it's time to take a break. And when we get back, we'll discuss the news and reviews of the newest version of the DCU.
Are you tired of fanboy comics podcasts? Looking for a show that really appreciates the comics storytelling medium and how it works? a show that looks at comics from any genre and anywhere in the world, comparing the storytelling techniques of different creators and different comics cultures, with manga, newspaper strips, European comics, and more discussed alongside mainstream U.S. comics. A show that includes talks with well-known creators like James Robinson and Dan Jurgens, and with less famous creators that you really should know. And hey, we'll even critique your comic. If you're looking for that show, then you're looking for Deconstructing Comics, and it's right here at deconstructingcomics.com. Also available in iTunes and on Stitcher. This is Tim saying check out our show every Monday. That's Deconstructing Comics.
And we're back. Seems like every couple of years or 5 or 6 episodes, we have to talk about new DC Comics stuff. There's relaunches and reboots and reimaginings and unboots, and now there is Rebirth. You found a pretty good description from an article in the LA Times.
Yeah, I like this. It sort of came from a regular news source reporting on a comic book event. That's always, I think, a good place to start. But the article describes it as Rebirth is a comic event that will run through many of DC's top titles. Not a reboot, like the previous New 52 initiative, but a relaunch of over 50 titles that will not throw away recent history, but hopes to right the ship in terms of editorial direction. New creative teams will be taking over many titles, while some will remain, but will be relaunched with new number ones. Rebirth will be publishing twice monthly on key characters, and the price of books will be brought down to $2.99.
Yay! Woo! Finally!
But before any announcements were underway, there was an apology. Co-publisher Dan DiDio addressed the DC-centric crowd, giving a mea culpa on the New 52, which relaunched many core titles. Though it did some good things, said DiDio, it seemed that feedback from the fans mixed with concerns coming from creators caused the powers that be to rethink every title and character in the comics stable. We talked about the New 52, but something was missing. You felt it, and over time, we felt it too, said DiDio. Why? Well, sometimes you lose your way. The whole purpose of this event is to show you, the fans, our commitment to you.
I want to take a moment and say how insanely radical it is for a comics publisher to actually admit that the problem is not with the fan base, but it's with the editors. Like, that never happens.
Yeah. I think that was some level of progress.
There seems to be some level of self-awareness and forethought going into this event, rather than just make everything different and cool and edgy. Because that will make people buy books.
Right.
Most importantly, recognizing something that comics fans, you and I particularly, have been saying for years, which is, I would buy comics if they weren't so dang expensive.
Yeah. And for us, you know, we bought some New 52 books. I read a ton of the trades. We bought a ton of Convergence books.
Yeah, we did.
And we're buying some of the new you or whatever the
whatever this
pre-rebirth
state. Yeah.
state is. But we've always been on the fringes in terms of, you know, thinking about this. The New 52 books that we were excited about were All-Star Western and Demon Knights, and which were always on the bottom half of the sales.
Oh, yeah.
And we weren't reading the main Convergence title.
No, God,
like,
no.
The main story itself didn't
have any
mean all that
draw.
Much to us.
No.
And then even here in the new you, it's the Starfire book. And again,
obviously Constantine the Hellblazer.
So it... But it hasn't been much from the Bat family, the Super family, Flash, GL. I mean, I think it's possible that no one that we've read has ever been in the Justice League. Close to it. DC Bombshells, it's an alternative universe,
yeah, that
so that
doesn't
one
really
doesn't
count.
Quite count. But
I'm pretty sure the last member of the Justice League that we were reading a book about was when you were reading Justice League Dark 2.5 years
That's
ago,
true.
And it had Zatanna.
That was a side, almost Justice League. But yeah, but that's as close as we've gotten. So we, in general, have sort of like the New 52. We liked Convergence. We liked where they're at now. But that's partly because we haven't read any of the mainstream titles.
Yeah.
And the super fans and the Bat fans and the GL fans.
And I would say
and
not...
the Flash heads have all been pretty...
And I want to cut in here before anyone sends us anger email. Not that we liked the direction.
No.
It's that we were entirely unaffected by the direction and had no negative feelings towards it.
Because the books we were buying were unaffected. We have many Facebook friends and podcasting buddies
who have been very vocal in their
displeasure, disdain for Superman and Batman and Aquaman and Firestar and where all those characters have been going over the years. You know, probably the closest for me to mainstream is I really liked the first take on Wonder Woman, which ran for about 30-some issues. Even that was off on its own sort of corner of the DCU. It was not attempting to integrate everything.
And it was almost a New Gods book, because like Orion and stuff were a big deal there.
Yeah.
There seems to be more actual consciousness on behalf of the company to doing what fans actually want.
I remember a story that Scott Gardner from Two True Freaks tells. It was at an event. I think it was may have been before the New 52 or right around the New 52. And Dan DiDio was there, and he asked him, when are you going to get Superman right? That may have been 10 years ago, for all I remember. The answer may be, we're going to try in 2016. Maybe finally there's going to be an answer to that question. And I'm getting that from the Mike Baileys, the Bob Fishers, the my super friends.
Yes.
You know, my friends in the Superman community who are cautiously cautious about Superman in this version.
Yeah. We are not the group that DC needs to reconnect with. Like, frankly, we are the success stories because after New 52, we were buying two books. After It Convergence, we bought half.
About half of those books.
And post Convergence, we were buying four.
Right.
So we are the success story of their marketing.
Right.
But it seems like the people who are in that group that need to be convinced are slowly being convinced. So hopefully we are not getting our hopes up only to have them dashed yet again.
Yeah.
And because there seems to be a little bit more understanding on behalf of the business side, hopefully we will not get screwed.
Yeah. So we've looked over the list, the solicits. And we've come up with a handful of titles that I would say intrigue us. Not saying that we're going to buy each of these, but at least for me, these are the ones that I'll listen for reviews for. Flip through the trades when they show up at the library or at the comic store. The ones that at least have piqued our interest, I think, is probably safe to say.
Yeah.
And similar to Convergence, just in terms of talking about this, I'm not exactly sure what those Rebirth specials are going to be for each of these characters, but to some extent, we may buy a decent amount of those and sort of use those as previews, which I'm sure is their intention, and then decide which we're going to carry on with.
They appear to be the pilot episodes.
Exactly. Hopefully better than the Supergirl pilot.
Yes.
In terms of encouraging. So we may end up purchasing more of those and then whittling or narrowing down from there.
Most importantly, we will be getting the official DC Rebirth 80-page special.
80 pages? That's got to be like $8.99, $9.99?
$2.99. Yeah. This is the start of the goodwill, good faith offerings on DC's part of realizing, okay, guys, we have really screwed you over for 26 pages for $4.99 for long enough. We're sorry.
So they're going with $2.99, and it sounds like this initial Rebirth special will be included at that $2.99 price point. So everything we've read. Now, as I said on a very recent podcast episode, I don't mind paying cover price or above cover price for a... Oh, wait, sorry, that was the April Fool's episode.
Never mind.
But to be honest, the $2.99 is helping in terms of encouraging that at least that initial toe in the water, especially as Marvel is going to $3.99, $4.99 in some cases on event books and number ones and that sort of thing. They're at least dipping their toe in the water at the high end of the price point. But of the books that have been announced, a couple immediately jumped out at me, and maybe for you as well. And I'm as excited as anybody about the return of Greg Rucka to Wonder Woman.
Yes. This is one of those great things about this movement, I guess, that it's not an unboot, a deboot, a let's throw things out. It's okay, let's acknowledge that we messed up, but let's also look back and try and get some people back. Mm-hmm. So there's been a big push about the people returning to DC and new faces coming in as well from other comic companies or from animation.
If you remember, after about 6 to 8 months of New 52, there were a bunch of creators that just left, and every one of them was telling the same story of editorial interference and control. And my hope is that this is another part of the outreach effort.
Yes.
Not just to disgruntled fans, but maybe to disgruntled creators as well.
Exactly. The fact that they have been able to beg and plead and convince these people to come back after messing them up as badly as they did after the New 52 implies
they must have laid some promises in place.
Rucka, at the very least,
right.
I would bet that he got in print and doubly notarized by like eight different attorneys that he cannot be removed from his title for the first
X
12 issues,
and
that he has complete creative control. Those contracts that these people managed to weasel out are probably
beautiful. I imagine
beautiful.
So, yeah. Now, Wonder Woman is going to be one of the twice monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing with the twice monthlies is doing multiple art teams.
Okay.
In an attempt to keep up. Wonder Woman in particular is doing parallel storylines, it sounds like, with different art teams in each of those.
I like that more than just having alternating art teams, unless those art teams are kind of similar.
Right.
Because if it's a single, continuous story going back and forth in art teams, it looks a little
weird. It can be, especially in the trade.
It's a bit off-putting.
Right.
You know, you can read past it, but it's annoying. But
this one will be theoretically issues 1, 3, 5, and 7 will be one art team telling one story, I think in one timeline. 2, 4, 6, 8, etc. would be in a different. So even theoretically, you could end up with different sales figures for those two. That would be interesting if something like that. Well, I love the odd number taking place in this era. I'm not so sure about the even number and the art there. And then what happens to the poor completionist collector?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but obviously a twice monthly book, you do have to consider the budgetary aspects.
Which is why
in
cutting
terms
the prices
of purchasing,
has
yes, exactly.
is definitely helped. But I think DC has realized, wait a minute, but if we cut the books on everything by 20%, our sales will go up in volume by 50%. That's a net increase.
Sort of works out, yeah.
Apparently, they've been listening to your podcast.
Yay.
Finally. We've only been yelling into the ether for like 2.5 years.
So to me, Wonder Woman is a definite check that one out, and probably check the first couple of issues out almost no matter what, and go from there. And then I think there's one other no-brainer for us, mostly for you.
Well, yeah, Hellblazer.
Of course.
My trench coat wearing asshole, magical, sad trash can son will be surviving this reboot, and I was not expecting that. I figured that Constantine would be re-relegated to the annals of weird DC history as soon as I heard that Rebirth was coming along with Starfire. Starfire, I don't mind ending, but I am so glad that he is managing to, like, hold on by his fingernails. And it's going to be a different creative team because Tinian is off doing his own different thing, but they've got Simon Oliver and Moritat, who we loved from the All-Star Western books,
yes.
Which is that great scritchy, scratchy,
almost
weird,
painterly weird style,
bizarre, sort of like, you know, what we had going in Gotham by Midnight.
Right.
Just that odd, off-putting, very stylized, angular style, which I think will work really, really well for Hellblazer.
So when you look at a page and you just, the first impulse is, this doesn't look like a comic book normally does. Well, that's good if it's something that's oddball. You don't want you don't want that to be your first impression of reading a Superman book.
No.
But if that's your first impression reading Jonah Hex or reading
Gotham by
Midnight
Demon Knights,
or Hellblazer, that's an okay first reaction.
That's a positive.
Exactly.
That's not a hindrance.
That's right. So to me, those are sort of the definites that I'm definitely going to check out. But other ones that intrigue me as well are, of course, everyone's talking about Another Return, Dan Jurgens, to Action Comics. I'm just looking forward to seeing where that goes. There's some goodwill now built up in the post-convergence Lois and Clark title. Sort of a continuation, at least, of that era. I don't think of that storyline necessarily, or that setup.
There's going
Superman, I'm a little confused by Superman. There's like a
There's going to be like two Supermen, maybe. I'm not entirely sure.
I've even heard, again, some of our super fans are a little confused about how this is all going to work out.
But you know what? I have faith that it will at least be interesting,
mm-hmm.
and it will probably be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, that's not really our thing, but it looks interesting. Speaking of, for action, also Detective Comics. This is the project that James Tynion is moving on to. I'm very intrigued by this because it has basically my dream team. Batman, Batwoman, and Tim Drake Robin all together in that book. This, I think, is the biggest thing that Rebirth is doing right is its team-ups. The character team-ups in the books and the writer-artist team-ups that they're putting on each title. So I'm very excited about that.
And these are the two books that are being un-denumbered.
Yes. Legacy re-un-anti-numbered.
And I think that speaks to an understanding that...
They messed up.
And again, a little step maybe towards setting that right. Now, of course, in those books, we'll be approaching issues 1,000 in the next half decade or so, whatever. So certainly there's some benefit that they'll accrue to having a couple books over a couple years, you know, reach a pretty amazing milestone. But the direction that those two books seem to be going to, at least the top line talent that they seem to be putting to those books, I think, is also... a show of goodwill, perhaps?
Yeah, and a closer return to not actual canon, but fanon.
Right.
To the fan conceptions of what the core of these characters are. They seem to be bringing the actual comics more in line with that.
Right.
Putting Tim Drake back in his Robin.
Right.
A Robin-esque costume of some variety, rather than, I think he was off being like Red Robin... or Red Hood, or Nightbird. I don't even know what Tim Drake has been doing for the last 5 years, but it's been weird. So having him back as Robin.
And I understand that Dick Grayson is coming back as Nightwing, not as Grayson the Super Spy, which I think seemed like an interesting story, but the wrong character doing those things, at least. That's the best that I've heard of it.
The best that I can say of it is that it was female gaze butt book. And we have reached a point as a society that we had the bubble butt book. And now we have done it. And we can actually do something with this character again, which would be nice.
For me, back on the Superman side of the equation, I just like the look of the Supergirl in the Supergirl book.
She's wearing Melissa Benoist's
costume. So, and I hope the story is okay, but at least I like that visual. And I'm intrigued conceptually by what was going to be the Superman, but which is going to end up being New Superman.
Yes, since it's going to be a Chinese main character and a Chinese writer, and he pointed out that Chinese does not have a definite article, which again just shows a little bit of like editor creates concept, brings writer onto it, writer gives feedback, editor listens. Like it's such a small thing, but it implies a good mindset.
I mean, and logistically, you needed another title. You couldn't call it Superman or Superman 2. You had to call it something else to differentiate it. And the Superman sounded as good as anything, except it didn't work sort of culturally with what they were doing. And I appreciate maybe a little sign of humility, a little sign of maybe we don't know everything going into this, and we'll listen
at least a little bit of constructive criticism
from somewhere. Yeah. But again, conceptually, I'm interested to see how that one's going to work. And that's when I will maybe pick up the one shot.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the ones I would listen to the Superman fandom and see what they're thinking or listen to reviews before maybe putting it on the pick up the trade list at some
that
point.
Might
but,
be
I'm,
a...
but I'm curious, the concept intrigues me.
It's one that I think if given good reviews, that is definitely one I would be interested in buying the trade, maybe right. on a slight discount.
Right.
You know, use the 30% off Barnes & Noble coupon and get it. For me, heading back to Gotham, Batman Beyond.
Now, this is one we thought we might like the last time they did Batman Beyond, but...
this time, actually featuring Terry McGinnis.
Because Batman Beyond, the animated, was absolutely one of your favorites. And I enjoyed it quite a bit as well. But
hands down, that it was just, I loved the heck out of that. Loved the look, loved the characters, loved the sensibilities. And if this Batman Beyond is actually going to be using that as reference material, very excited about that. Again, bringing back the characters that I love. People right. of my generation know mm-hmm. Batman, Batwoman, Tim Drake, Robin, right. Terry McGinnis, Nightwing, and actually taking those characters and putting them back in their roles that we know them from.
Right.
It's giving everybody their safety blanket back, and I think that it shows good signs. I'm just going to keep being cautiously optimistic until proven otherwise.
Now, I don't know if I've heard this as a confirmation announcement, or if I've heard it as a wink-wink, anything could happen. But I heard Batman Beyond used in relation to Legends of Tomorrow. Have you heard that?
We know that they're going to get Jonah Hex. If
right,
you're gonna go
they're
to
going
the past
back to the past.
And see some of the old-timey heroes.
Why not?
I haven't heard any official anything or even like fan cast mutterings about this.
But
that is a thing. So I would also be 100% here for.
The way that I heard that may very well have been, ooh, wouldn't it be cool if?
Yeah.
You know, from miscellaneous Facebook friend. So it may be completely unofficial,
not even
completely
a rumor.
Anything, yeah.
And I mean, that sort of street level stuff that they did there with the Jokers, that would totally be a thing
right.
that Legends would take on because you have minions. They mm-hmm. love fighting minions.
Now, at this point, when we mentioned them going back to do Jonah Hex, Shag Matthews just sat up and said, but what about Cinnamon?
Nighthawk?
No, Cinnamon.
Well.
Okay, they're sort of a package deal, I guess.
She is hot.
That's what I hear. Now, there's one, of course, that with our podcasting history, mostly yours.
We're quite excited.
We do have to mention two of our favorite words.
Super Sons.
Super and Sons. I know this is not the Haneyverse. This is not Planet Bob.
They're not debooting us that far.
This is not that Wacky's World's Finest stuff from the 70s.
But
again, I've heard conceptually this one is sort of interesting.
They have worked hard the last couple of years establishing Damian Wayne as a character. And I don't mm-hmm. really like Damian Wayne, but I have come
But
I have come to accept
he's
him.
He's part of the DCU. So.
He is now an established character. And I am always here for Super Dad.
Mm-hmm.
So having Jonathan Kent II
mm-hmm.
and Damian Wayne teaming up, it kind of does have that original Super Sons vibe of the sort of angry, bitter son of a superhero, in this case being Robin, and the light-hearted, bright-eyed Superboy teaming up, like, it kind of strikes me as classic Teen Titans, of mm-hmm. having the sidekicks together and doing their own thing.
Right.
And the Teen Titans, by this point, have now become so established as their
right.
young adult mid-20s selves.
This is a chance to sort of recreate a little bit of that vibe.
We kind of have a space filled for super teens, super preteens even, because I think they're both in the 11 to 13 range. I'm really down with that, because we haven't had super teenagers in a while. This is why I'm also 100% here for possible mutterings about the Legion of Superheroes one day down the line being involved in Rebirth.
And I think I can speak for what I've heard from Justice Society fans, sort of the same thing. It's like, okay, at least they've acknowledged our favorite properties exist. They're on the long-term to-be-written list.
And
so, okay.
Maybe after this goes, if maybe one of the Bat books doesn't sell as well and they trim it down to 3, or New Superman lasts 14
right?
or 20 issues,
we've got room
and there's maybe a space
JSA
in the
we can
in
throw
schedule,
in, or
so.
Legion, or, yeah.
I just really want Supergirl and the Legion to be a thing. Like, I really want that.
Maybe Supergirl is the backdoor way to get Legion back into our universe.
Because they do also have the Supergirl TV show spin-off comic.
Right.
And they're doing something
Doing something different. Right.
And they're doing something with Superwoman.
Right.
I have no idea what that is. The most we've seen is literally,
you know, a sketch. And that is one of the last ones in the schedule, late in the summer. So not much has been done on that, and certainly things could change.
But maybe if two out of the three survive, or one...
Exactly.
I'm just really here for, like, Supergirl and the Legion. I want it on the TV show. I want it in the TV show comic. I just want it everywhere, because Superboy is sort of its own kind of weird thing continuity-wise. Right. We're getting a new Superboy and the Superman, who's slightly younger, but again, like your mid-20s.
Right.
Rather than your mid to late 30s. So if we have a Superboy, a young Superman, and Superman pre-Flashpoint, and a new 52 Superman kind of all at once, like, that's a lot of Supermans and Superboys. I just really want Brainiac 5 and Kara to make out, okay? I don't even really ship it that much. I just think that it conceptually fits together really well, that you can do the Superboy stories with Supergirl.
And we've got at least one more to talk about here, but our list does not include GL or Flash. But again, from fans of those properties, there seems to be some positivity, at least bringing Ethan Van Sciver back to do some work in the Green Lantern verse.
Mm-hmm.
Flash, again, some hopeful signs from fans as well.
I know Wally's going to be back. Mm-hmm. That always makes me happy, because I do love me some Wally West.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about his age, but I'm just saying, if they were to do a newest New Teen Titans or a Young Justice with our Batman, our Batboy, and our Superboy, and Kid Flash.
You know, could work.
So it's just, this whole lineup is setting up a lot of possibilities,
right,
which we are interested in. Speaking of interesting things that make me very happy, Blue Beetle, which I really love the Convergence book.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that they mentioned Ted Kord in the Convergence books, because I do love Ted Kord. He does not get enough love.
Right.
But Blue Beetle is going to be doing something great, which is have your cake and eat it too, that we are going to have Ted as the established mentor Blue Beetle and Jaime. And I am so there for this. Jaime Reyes is another great, cool character, but his entire arc happened in the time I wasn't reading comics.
Right. I think logistically, one of the things that was a problem with the New 52 is that none of the characters were basically over the age of 29.
Yeah.
I mean, Superman may have been the first, but he was still pretty young in his book. So I like the idea of having a few of those mentor-type figures around, and it may have been the success of the Convergence JSA book in terms of
old heroes.
But that was one of the more popular / beloved books out of that event, where you had the sort of one last ride, and I think it was just proof that people of whatever age, even millennials like yourself, you're not disinclined to hate old people and not want to read their books. I'm not incapable of relating
to people over the age of 40. This is actually a thing that Netflix recently made a big statement about, and it was actually, it's hilarious.
Right.
It's, if you Google it, the headline that comes up is, Netflix executives officially denote demographic preferences as utter bullcrap.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, this is why we do so great, is because we don't try to cater to any demographics. What are you talking about? Now that we've gone international, people were like, oh, well, your lineup has to change in each of those countries. And they're like, no, there are nerds in every country.
Mm-hmm.
There are sports fans in every country. People want romance in every country. Like, your demographic descriptors don't determine what you like.
Right.
What you like determines what you like. This is why they have their whole algorithm based on, you like this, try this. Rather than,
as opposed to you are
a 26-year-old single female, watch Jane the Virgin.
Right.
I don't like Jane the Virgin. Legends of Tomorrow, please.
So again, here we are talking on Shortbox Showcase about an upcoming DC change event. Sort of, optimistic about it.
I know that we're kind of always positive about these things, because we're just upbeat, happy people in general. But this one looks like it will actually be the best. Not just we will like it, but empirically have the most quality behind it.
And in this one, we're at least potentially, you and I, getting closer to the mainstream.
Yeah, which is
weird.
We've
talked Wonder Woman, we've talked action, we've talked detective. So it's not just the weird side books that are intriguing us.
That's weird in and of itself. We might theoretically be buying 5 Trinity books. Speaking of which, Trinity, I totally forgot to mention and is a thing. We might be buying 5 or 6 books that feature the Trinity or Trinity characters.
We may be even buying a few books that rank in the top half of DC's most popular sold books,
which
is very rare.
Don't go saying crazy things like that.
Well, it's just always the case to find where our books are on the sales list. You usually start at the bottom.
Work
your way up to find Hellblazer, to find Demon Knights, to find All-Star Western, to find Gotham by Midnight.
But the longer they go on, the less far we have to go up the list.
That's true, because they, So we sort of maybe have some hopes for where they're starting. Lots of specials
To investigate,
and we will certainly come back and report our findings.
Lots of possible good things on the horizon. Possible Legion, possible New Gods, possible JSA. How that stuff is going to get incorporated or when, who knows? But
then the cynic in me would say, that's probably not going to happen before they reboot again in 8 months. But I hope that doesn't happen.
That's just where you need to take your angry little comic book guy and just shove him back in his box. Him in the corner. Yay. This is a time for hope.
Exactly.
Actual hope would be nice.
So obviously, whatever feedback you would want to send to us about this topic or about even the stuff at the end of the feedback where we talked about female-led.
Female super books. Yeah,
give us some reviews and thoughts on that, or what parts of this version of DC
that you think are going to be the worst thing ever.
I was going to go with that you're hopeful for, but I like your approach too.
Which one will get us more feedback? This time it might be about 50-50.
You never know. Again, as you heard the first half of the episode, we love addressing feedback.
That we do. So you can email us at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or comment on our Facebook posts through the group that we have, Relatively Geeky Podcast, or relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
If you like what we have going on here, if you could take the time to do an iTunes rating and review, we'd really appreciate that as well. That helps more people find us, and you want that, don't you?
Grow our listener base.
Again, of course, thanks for listening. And remember, anytime we talk about crazy comic book stuff, key thing to keep in mind is that we are not experts.
We're just family. I was going to make a front of the pack joke, and then I realized that I would have hated myself. So that's going to go in the recycle bin.
So he's the leader of the pack?
No.